Nick Ashew on the Fan. I was told there was banger music coming in. I don't have any glow sticks. It's been a while since I've been in one of these kind of raves, that's for sure. I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials. We got the World Cup starting. We got Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Tonight's a good day. Good day. Love it. If you're a Hoops fan, this show is going to be for you. I'm just going to tell you that right now. With Ben Strober producing, too. We got a lot. We got a lot of hoops, I promise you that. But I will say this, it was nice to see the U.S. open the World Cup the way they did last night. You know, you don't have to be like a soccer fan. You don't have to be somebody that really follows the sport to enjoy the World Cup, to want to be a part of just the event, right? We're an events-driven society. We enjoy big moments. We enjoy being a part of them, especially with sports, right? Like, anything can feel like a big moment if it's the right situation, if it's presented the right way. It's like... most of us don't know anything about the Winter Olympics, most of the sports, right? I don't know anything about bobsled or skeleton, but I know about when the Olympics are going on, right? You know why? Because it's an event, and you just kind of immerse yourself in it. And once people want to be a part of the club, want to be a part of the group, everybody's talking about the World Cup, everybody's talking about the Knicks in the NBA Finals, everybody else gets on board, right? Everybody jumps on the bandwagon, and it's great. I mean, yeah, if you look at the NBA Finals, the Knicks and Spurs have brought in record ratings. Record ratings. Even Taylor Swift wants to pretend to be a Knicks fan. And yes, pretend. Come on. Let's be honest with ourselves here. You watch that, it was so staged. Whatever. Swifties can come after me. I don't care. I'm not going to apologize for that. But, you know, the World Cup's the same way. People don't watch soccer a lot of times. That will still watch the World Cup. That will now, moving forward, watch more of these games. They win 4-1. You beat Paraguay. It's a good team. He had 70,000 fans at SoFi Stadium. Jaden Daniels was there. I saw that. It's pretty cool to see Jaden Daniels hanging out there. You got a kind of an... I mean, Christian Pulisic is the name we talk about a lot, but Follerin Balogun, I've been practicing his name, working hard with that. Might be the new star for this team. 2 goals in the first half. First U.S. player to score 2 goals in any game, not even just the first half, in any game for the U.S. since 1930. Think about that. What happened last night with Follerin Balogun... Am I doing a good job, Ben? Am I saying it right? I think I'm getting it right.
I couldn't tell you.
Come on, man.
I just know that guy's a dog.
Yeah, you're supposed to be help support me with this. You know, I'm working on it. Follerin Balogun. I'm getting it. But look, no, I mean, it's been almost 100 years since what he did last night was done. And, you know, that's a big deal. It's a big deal because it helps now create momentum for this team, for this sport, for this event, you know, all of it. And look, we all know people will jump on the bandwagon if the U.S. is... winning games in the World Cup, gets the quarterfinal, maybe, you know, wins there and continues on. It's kind of a fun run in front of potentially home field, you know, your home field, sort of, depending on where you're playing. I mean, it's mostly in the U.S. And, you know, it's like there's a lot to it. That's what makes any of these big sporting events, even if you're not interested in it, you're like you become a part of it. I was talking to a couple friends this morning. They were just like, the first conversation was about the World Cup. Wasn't even about the Knicks. And I was like, whoa, hold on. We got to talk about these NBA Finals here. But, I mean, this is where, you know, everybody kind of comes together. And there's a level of, like, patriotism or like, yeah, we're all on the same team. And, I mean, it's the one time where it's the case, right? Like, if you're listening and you live in the U.S. right now, you're going to be talking to somebody that at least lives in the U.S. most likely, if it's face-to-face. And it's like, hey. You're rooting for the U.S., even if you're from somewhere else. Like, there's a level of, it's not 100%, but, you know, there's a level of, there's like, everybody's kind of on the same team with this. And when you have stars, when you have young stars that make you feel like U.S. soccer is growing, it's getting better, it's improving with just its perception around the world, all of that, it hits, it resonates, and it matters. And it's okay if somebody's jumping on the bandwagon. That's fine. That's how you develop new fan bases. That's how you get, you know, more kids involved. I always said this about the Nats, right? When the Nats first started winning, remember that era? That was fun. Although, as I know, they're, you know, again, it's a better season now. It's better, but I'm just saying, like, when we're talking World Series Nationals, right? When the expectations were World Series, there was a lot of, well, look at all these people jumping on the Nats bandwagon. And at that point, they hadn't been in the city that long, and in the grand scheme of things, they still haven't been in existence that long, if you want to talk about like the history of baseball. But because they were winning, because young fans came on board, what you ended up doing was developing a new fan base. People were getting on board, getting that emotional connection, and then riding with the team. Now you got to stick with it. Part of being a fan is suffering, but at the same time, That's how you develop new fans. That's how people, you know, get involved and want to be a part of this and want to watch the MLS or Premier League or anything else on top of that and help spread the sport in all these other ways. So, look, this the World Cup is going to be a conversation. Is once the NBA Finals are done, Stanley Cup Finals done, you got the NBA draft, and then it's just baseball, and it's regular season baseball, so it's just a long season. We all know that. The dog days of summer aren't even here yet. And it's going to be the World Cup. That's a big part of the conversation. And that's what makes this so great. And listen, you got to have the star power. The star power really matters. And it seems like the U.S. has got that. And Christian Pulisic is a pretty recognizable name, I think, at this point now, right? But now you have another. Fallarin Balogun. How's that, Ben? Did I do better?
Good job.
Yeah.
Proud of you, man.
I want. I need encouragement.
You're versatile.
Yeah, I'm trying to be as versatile as I can. So we'll see. They got another game coming up against Australia. That game's now in Seattle. They go from L.A. to Seattle, then back to L.A. again. It's just, you know, you're moving around a little bit. But it's, you know, I mentioned the NBA ratings, though. These NBA finals have been, I mean, look, the NBA playoffs is a whole monster numbers. But the NBA finals, I mean, the best we've seen since the late 90s. This is great for the league. And you know, the NBA is in that transition era now. The NBA is in that spot where you're starting to look and try to figure out, okay, what's going to be next? Who are going to be the teams? Who are going to be the faces? Who are going to be the names? And it's not going to be one answer. Like, yeah, the obvious choice is Victor Wembanyama, but it's not going to happen instantly. He's kind of making himself the villain a little bit. We know he's got a chance to be a star. He checks all the boxes to be a star and one of the faces of the league. But when you go back to 1998 to 2003, that five-year stretch-ish, actually, even probably past that, if we're being honest with ourselves, that whole stretch was Jordan retired, LeBron hadn't been drafted yet. Most people didn't know who LeBron was until, I mean, you started hearing about him when he was a sophomore in high school. But for the most part, over that stretch, his name wasn't even mentioned. It was Kobe, it was Shaq, it was maybe, is it Tim Duncan? The Spurs were winning, the Lakers were winning. But there was no real clear-cut who is the next face of the league, who is the next team of the league, who is the... Now, you could argue the Lakers, they won championships over that stretch, but it didn't stick long because, you know, Shaq got traded to Miami and it kind of broke that thing up. Now, again, I'll always look at that as that's one of the greatest what-ifs in sports history. If Shaq and Kobe had finished their careers together in L.A., how many championships would they have won? That's the closer to the... Not two, not three, not four, not five. I mean, that's about as close as it would have been. Ben, if I had to give you a number, how many championships would the Lakers have won if Shaq and Kobe finished their career together?
Ooh.
Right? You got to think about it, but it could be a lot. Maybe five?
Probably.
Maybe six, right? They definitely would have won a couple more.
I go four or five.
Okay. All right, so a couple more. But that's where we sit, right? We sit in this spot where you think about what could have been. But there's that transition period during that time in the NBA where you didn't really know for sure. Now, in terms of the longevity of these two teams in the Knicks and Spurs, the more likely candidate to kind of sustain this roster and sustain this success in the way that they're built is the Spurs. Out of these two. I mean, the Thunder and the mix and all that. But because the Knicks bought a contender, in the sense that they traded picks, spent a lot of money in free agency. They're going to have to try and keep this thing together now when it comes to Karl Anthony Towns' contract or trade him, which, by the way, could still be a possibility. Jalen Brunson's not going to take another pay cut moving forward. OG Anunoby's locked up. Mikal Bridges is locked up. You know, Josh Hart, things like that. So, but it's going to get expensive. It's going to get really expensive. Now, a team like the Spurs, they can keep this team relatively together because it's going to be a while until Wemby gets, you know, due a contract extension, and that's going to be a process. And you got a lot of these other young guys on the roster where that's going to be a thing. And yeah, they're going to start having to add these extensions, start paying for these guys. But there's a bigger chance that the Spurs keep this thing together over the Knicks. Like, this might be the Knicks' one chance in these NBA finals, whether it's tonight or game six or game seven. But I would say this, don't play with your food. Just get this thing done and close it out. This might be the Knicks' one chance because the Celtics could be better next year. They could be aggressive this offseason. The argument could be made that the Pistons take the next step. It's a young team with a lot of talent. It wasn't that long ago we thought about the Thunder and went, they can't win. Oh, okay. So it could be the same thing with the Pistons. And look, I will tell you this. We're not that far off from, if it all goes together, that the Wizards are in the conversation as a contender in the Eastern Conference. again, there are a lot of steps that still have to come into play, and Anthony Davis's future is a question, and you know what Trae Young's long-term future with this team could be, and are they drafting DeBonsa? Are they drafting Darren Peterson? I think it's probably DeBonsa, but I can tell you for a fact they are doing their due diligence and asking around a lot and having a lot of conversations about Darren Peterson. But despite the fact that whoever it is that they're talking to about number one overall, you know, the East is much more up for grabs, and there's a lot of younger teams that could take that next step where the Knicks start aging out. The Knicks start getting more expensive. So, like, this is their one chance. But the NBA is in a position now where you at least have really good teams and a high level of interest in these games, when for so long it was like Steph and LeBron in the finals for four straight years. Remember, we had that with Warriors-Cavs, then, of course, LeBron before that with Miami, and then LeBron before that with Cleveland, and LeBron after that, you know, and it's just been like a lot of LeBron and Steph.
The windows are so short, Nick. Like, that's what the new CBA has done. It's made everyone's window so small. So the only way to really have an extended window is doing what the Spurs and Thunder have done, what the Wizards are trying to do. But even then, it's not that long term, because last year it's, oh my God, nobody's ever going to beat OKC. Then all of a sudden, oops, they lose in the Western Conference Finals the next year. And now Chet Holmgren is making a whole bunch of money, and everyone's like, are they going to have to trade him? The windows are so small because of the way the CBA is constructed right now. And there's the parity at an all-time high. And now people all of a sudden are like wondering if parity is good for the sport. And I'm like, you guys complained about it 10 years ago when it was the same finals every year.
The dreaded second apron is a thing in the NBA right now. And it's pissing a lot of teams off, too. And part of it was created to avoid these super teams and avoid these, you know, heavily stacked rosters at the very top, the top-heavy ones and all that. But at the same time, you've watered down free agency. You're right. And, you know, it's not just the short windows. I saw a report this morning, actually, too, that a lot of front office people are saying teams might get cheap this offseason in free agency. And they might not be looking to spend as much because they don't want to get caught into that second apron and deal with everything that's going on. And you look around and say, maybe the only way is to draft. It's why, and it's why, Ben, you and I have talked about this a lot, right? Like, I'm not saying this just because I'm being nice. Like, I really love what the Wizards have done, their approach, and I really think that this is a team that is a couple years out from, if the arrow keeps pointing up, being talked about at where the Thunder were the year they won 57 games, before they won 57 games, right? Like, they went from 40 to 57, number one seed in the West, but lost in the second round. We're a couple years away. Like, to me, the trajectory for the Wizards is this year 40-ish wins, give or take, and those big jumps happen a lot, and we know this team was better than 17 wins. We all know what they were doing. But then the next year is, okay, the younger guys have gotten better. They've kind of solidified their rotations and what the roster looks like. They've tinkered with it somewhat. You figured out Anthony Davis. I'd make the argument that Trae Young might not even be back either. I'd say move him if I were you, as opposed to keeping him and try to get something back in return, get some more picks, move this thing down, stay young, built the way the Spurs and Thunder are built. And we're talking a couple years from now. Ben, this should be a team that is talked about as one of the top four teams, at least in the Eastern Conference, in a couple of years.
That's their goal. They said when they get to the playoffs, they want to be there for a long time. They don't want to be a flash in the pan that's in and out for a 1 or 2 year period. It's supposed to be an extended perennial contender status. So next year, you got to take the step forward, but tamper the expectations a little bit, because them getting to the play-in tournament or even somehow being a top six team in the East, I think a lot would kind of have to happen for them to make that jump. But if it did, that would be a massive step forward. But I think the play-in should be a real goal in sight that they should achieve.
Yeah, listen, I'm not going to be a crazy person that's going to say next year the Wizards are like a top four seed in the East. I mean, anything is possible.
Hey, Trae Young said first seed.
Well, yeah, well, listen. Here's what Trae Young is doing. Trying to show that he's not a bad teammate, because that was the reputation in Atlanta. So he's just he's the ultimate wizard right now. I'll believe it when I actually see it. No, they're not going to be a one seed, but that's fine. Again, you can say whatever you want. I'd rather your team be overconfident than underconfident, but like, let's be smart about it here. But no, this is a team that has been built in the right way. And again, the ties to the Thunder front office is really, really important. And look, rebuilds are not fun, but if you have a plan, I've always said, I've seen this for years too, and people are like, oh, well, you know, Wizards fans are so sick of, you know, or talking previous era. I'm talking before they started this rebuild. There was so much. And this is back when I'm begging this team to trade Bradley Beal and get, they could have gotten so many first round picks two years before they actually traded him. Do it, trade him. Like, there's this like, well, Wizards fans won't show up and they're not going to care. If you have a team that is actually rebuilding for real, not the fake rebuild, not the play for the 8 seed like it used to be. And then before that, it was, you know, and then after that, it was the play-in tournament. And when it wasn't about NBA purgatory, when it wasn't about just getting like one extra game, and it was about really building a team for a long period of time, my argument has always been Wizards fans, DC sports fans, it is a hoops town. Like, I get the Commanders are big. I understand the Commanders are the big dog in DC, and it's going to be that way. DC is a hoops town, and people care about basketball. They understand basketball, and you understand what it means to do a real rebuild, to be locked into a rebuild, but doing it the right way. Now, you have to show the progression, and they've shown that progression to this point. It has to continue. You can't stop that way, but showing that, hey, we're gutting this thing, but trust us and understand that it really is, and I hate to say trust the process because we all know what that meant in Philadelphia, but again, like, at least they built a team that was a contender for a while. Take that at this point if you're the Wizards, but, you know, the goal is to win a championship. The only way to do that is to really, especially in today's NBA now, is, again, to do what the Wizards are doing now, to do what the Spurs have done, to do what the Thunder have done. Now, don't get me wrong, luck has been involved, but luck was involved for the Spurs. They got Victor Wembanyama. Luck was involved, you know, with the Thunder, and I'd argue it was actually luck in the sense that they, even though he only played 1 year with the Clippers, they traded for SGA, and he turned it out to a two-time MVP now. And that was, that's like almost drafting a player. If he spends 1 year with another team, I mean, there was not this level of expectation. They helped develop him. They helped him get to that point. And the Wizards, luck was involved with this draft, getting the number one overall pick and the most hyped draft that we've had in decades, since really probably 2003. Maybe 2007. But again, we're talking two-plus decades here. So you have to have some luck that's involved with it as well. But all those pieces are falling in place for the Wizards, where it's not going to be out of the realm of possibility that we're talking about them in the finals if this continues in a few years. Like, this is true. And I know it sounds crazy, but again, the Spurs won 34 games last year. And the Thunder went from, what, like 24 to 40 to 57. Like, these jumps happen. So it sounds crazy because you can't wrap your head around the concept of, like, this team, whoever it is, fill in the blank, and championship or contender in the same sentence. But it happens all the time. Hell, look at the two teams that were in the Super Bowl. The Seahawks and Patriots were both long shots to get there. Well, it's a different sport, but I'm just saying, like, that's what makes sports great. So we'll see. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. Look, I know they're a couple years away at least, but it's not crazy to talk about the Wizards the way the Spurs have jumped. Listen, it's weird for me to say that too because we're so used to the mediocrity, but again, they have built this in the way that it's the same level of trajectory that the Spurs and Thunder have gone through. And I'm just going to keep saying it, and if I have to speak it into existence that way, I'm going to do it. But it makes sense. And I know it's, like, I've always said this, it's difficult to accept a team as a contender until you actually see it. You know, I said it years ago about the Nuggets, even, when they won their title in 2023. You watched for years that team fall short, and before that, they were generally a mess. They had some good years with Carmelo Anthony and, hell, Melo and Allen Iverson, right? But they weren't ever a contender. They always fell short. They were a team that was also a basement dweller a lot, all those things. The Warriors, before Steph Curry really took off, before Steve Kerr took over, that team, their best was, what, a 47-win season under Mark Jackson before he got fired? So it's hard for us to wrap our heads around, right? It's hard to change the reputation of a team until you actually see it. It's hard for people to look at the Commanders and think, oh, different organization. Whether it's in this market or outside. It's either way. So it's hard for people to hear Wizards and contender in the same sentence because you haven't seen it ever. I mean, really, the closest, I guess we go back to like the Gilbert Arenas era, maybe. There was a John Wall, Bradley Beal short window where you had it. They were losing in the second round a couple of years, but then injuries took over. So even then, it was like not really contender, but it was like playoff team that could maybe grow if you had some more pieces. So Wizards and contender in the same sentence is really tough. I saw this clip, Ben. I know you have it. Danny was just getting ridiculed for saying this. Was it yesterday or the day before? And it's just wrong. Just people laughing at him.
Let's say the Wizards are in the finals. Again, don't laugh. Stop laughing. In this hypothetical, the Washington Wizards are in the NBA finals. And everybody... No! I said no! No! It's a fun hypothetical. Don't be a jerk about it, studio audience. All right? Okay, but try it one more time. In this hypothetical, the Washington Wizards are on the NBA finals. I mean, and it's the one with the claps too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
That's tough.
That's the harder one.
I listen. It's hard to say that without laughing, but at the same time, it can change. It can evolve. It's just not there yet, but. If this team starts off hot next year, you know what's going to happen. Oh, the hype around the Wizards and how fast they turn this thing around, or how fast can they start to win in the playoffs, or then the conversation nationally is going to be more about the Spurs and Thunder comparisons, and it is the formula now in today's NBA that makes you a contender. It really is. And, you know, free agency is getting harder and harder. The last free agency class that really, really had an impact. I mean, we probably would have to go back to, 2019, when Durant went to the Nets with Kyrie? Now, yeah, stars ask for trades, and they can still be traded now. But it's getting harder across the board to do this. And the second apron and all the taxes that are on teams that, you know, have these loaded rosters, which is something the Knicks are going to have to think about. They're already really expensive. Look at the Cavs. The Cavs went to the Eastern Conference Finals, but they got swept. That was the most expensive roster in the NBA this past year. It's not going to look the same next year. And free agency is not really going to be the answer as much anymore. It gets to the point now where you have to build the way the Wizards have. And yeah, look, some of it's luck. Oh, and by the way, it's also going to get harder because it's going to get harder to tank and actually get a top overall pick. So I don't even know what the answer is anymore. I don't know what the strategy is for teams anymore to try and rebuild in the NBA, because the NBA's taken everything and they're like, you're doing too well at this. We strike that down. You're really good in free agency and you spent money. No mas. Oh, yeah, you want a tank? We'll take that away from you too. What's left? I guess it's trades. I mean, that's really it. But look, like, the Wizards have that young roster. A lot of this is put together. You got all that stuff. And I would not be surprised if the Wizards make a couple of trades this offseason. Look, I think Anthony Davis gets traded. I do. And there have been teams like the Warriors getting thrown around. LeBron, Anthony Davis teaming up in Golden State with Steph, Draymond, Jimmy Butler when he's healthy, won last year. There will be a team that will be desperate. I know people are like, oh, Anthony Davis's stock is low. How low is it really, though? Like, I understand that he's been hurt his entire career, so you can't be like, well, he missed a ton of games with Dallas last year before and never played with the Wizards. Yeah, everybody knew what they were doing. He could have played. Everybody knows what's going on. So you're telling me there's not going to be a team that says that's the one guy, if we can get 50 games out of him and really just keep him healthy for the playoffs? There's always another team that says we can get more. Always. This is always how this works. Wizards are going to end up moving Anthony Davis. Maybe not before the season. And in some ways, you could argue, and I've said this, right? I agree. Give him some time in the beginning of the season, and then you can sell high. Trade him when he looks really good and healthy. And maybe that's when Golden State comes swinging in. Maybe the Nuggets. What if the Nuggets are like, we need a guy that can protect the rim and play alongside Jokic? Again, I don't know what the return's going to be at, but I'm just saying, let's start talking first about whether or not he could be moved. And I'm telling you, don't think that there is a guarantee that Trae Young stays here long-term either. I mean, I wouldn't do it. Hawks were way better once he got traded. And that is a fact. That is a better team since Trae Young got traded in Atlanta. All right, we'll talk to Jake Hassan next. He's actually live in Omaha. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. We got the World Cup going on. We got the NBA Finals tonight. Stanley Cup Finals still going. And the College World Series, which, listen, man, if you love baseball, college baseball just continues to grow and expand in popularity. And look, again, like I said about the World Cup, right, when you make it an event, it becomes an event. Everybody wants to be at Madison Square Garden courtside, including Taylor Swift. Everybody wants to be at, you know, the U.S.'s first World Cup game. Jaden Daniels was there. Tom Cruise was there. Lots of people were there. Events make people that much more excited. Jake Hassan jumps on with me now, live from Omaha, actually. Hassan's Hacks on Substack, the show in the U, wherever you get your podcasts, live there with Game Day Garage. Look, we'll get to what it's like there in Omaha. There's a lot. Because here's the thing with you. I'll tell you this, Jake, and as you know about, this is a Saturday show here today, so it's loosey-goosey, and we're just going to kind of throw across a lot of different things. First off, set the scene for me what it's like to be at the College World Series there. What is it like to be in Omaha? As we know, it's I'm sure it's sunny right now. You've got great weather, and everything's fine, right?
Yeah, it is now. If you checked in about 3 hours ago, Nick, when it looked like it was about midnight, and I, as somebody who's lived in Chicago my whole life in a big city where tornadoes don't happen, today, this morning, was the first time where I was like, am I actually mentally prepared for a tornado and what I need to do to go through a tornado? But no, now it's the weather broke. It's sunny. It's beautiful. It's about 70 degrees even. It's great. I'm very excited. It's the College World Series is exactly what it looks like on TV. It's an event, like you were saying. Like, it's unbelievable. The jello shots are flowing. The, yes. The stadium is insane. I mean, I was there, boots on the ground, for the West Virginia-Troy game yesterday, which was insane, back and forth the entire way. You had a steal of home. It was awesome. So it's exactly what it looks like. And honestly, probably on TV, it doesn't even do it justice either. It's fantastic.
You know, there's some videos of you circulating on social media, tarps off at some games. I hope you know that.
Of course. I mean, listen, it's a trend that's sweeping the nation. I would be remiss to not partake.
All right. So what would it take? Because people don't have to see the video for them to know what I'm about to ask you. What would it take for you to wax your chest live on camera?
Take all the money in the world and then double it. It's not happening.
It would be a great video. I would definitely take that. All right, I do want to – I'm just, again, like I said, dude, it's like everything for me with you, because I know you can pretty much focus on literally everything. We talk about events and we talk about the World Cup. Dude, so here's the thing, because obviously you follow like the College World Series and college baseball intricately, and you're great at betting college baseball, and you're great at just kind of having the background that a lot of people don't know until maybe they jump in for the College World Series. I feel like the World Cup is the same thing. When you see things that maybe you're not as like invested in necessarily, but it's just a big event, because this is my theory. No matter what it is, if it's a big event like the World Cup, people are going to want to be involved. People are going to want to watch it. People are going to want to see it. How much has like the World Cup been a conversation with what the U.S. did last night, winning 4-1? Has that been anything that you've heard from anybody that's there? Because like, for me personally, man, I feel like that's all anybody now wants to talk about is like, oh, by the way, did you see the U.S.? Like, people just helicopter into some of these things. But honestly, Jake, I feel like that's what makes sports great.
No, it is great. And they had it on. I mean, people who have been even casually following the College World Series know, you know, Rocco's, you know, the Jello Shot Challenge, you know, it's the famous bar across the street from the stadium where people go. And we were there last night, and people, they had the U.S. game on every other screen, with the North Carolina Ole Miss game being on the other screens. And people were excited. I mean, every goal that the U.S. scored, the bar erupted. People were chanting USA. Like, people were excited. It was a fun time. So I think you're right. Even people helicoptering in for the World Cup, it's still, even here in Omaha, where college baseball is king, like, people are still invested and people are still paying attention and want to be a part of the conversation and want to be invested in this team and in the Team USA.
All right, for people that might need a little action on the College World Series, just looking for something, you know, it's getting a little quieter this time of year, other than NBA Finals maybe or Stanley Cup. You got any bets? You got anything people can still kind of helicopter in that world into?
Yeah, for sure. I bet both games today. I basically have a money line bet on Texas the rest of the way because I have futures on them. But for the early game that starts in a couple of hours between Oklahoma and Alabama, I can't believe that Alabama is about a 10-15 cent favorite. I think this should be closer to a pick. Oklahoma has a real team of destiny thing going for them, and the wind's going to be blowing a little bit in for this first game, and I think that's going to help Oklahoma's pitching staff a lot, because even though they can be volatile, if the ball is going to stay in the park, they're going to get their best performance out of the Oklahoma pitching staff. Their offense can hit with anybody. So I think there's a little hashtag value on Oklahoma on the money line for this one. And then if you want to bet the Texas-Georgia game, like I said, I'm big on Texas. I'm rooting for Texas the rest of the way. So it does hurt my heart to say this, but Georgia being plus money to anybody is a mistake. Dylan Volantis for Texas is awesome. He's going to be a first-round pick in next summer's draft, but Georgia has been steamrolling everybody. They won the SEC. They won the SEC tournament. They had no problem getting to the Super Regionals, or getting through the Super Regionals, rather, and getting to Omaha. So it hurts my heart to say it, but if you see a plus money number with Georgia, you just got to take it. It's going to age well, even if it loses.
Talking to Jake Hassan here on The Fan, did that walk-off grand slam by the Giants break my Nationals? They lost 10-2 to the Mariners last night, buddy.
You can't break what's already broken.
I told you to be nice. Come on. They're already overachieving.
I'm not being mean. I'm just telling you a fact of the matter is this team was already broken. A shattered glass, can you shatter it more? I don't know, but they're a team that's not good. Yes, we talked about the other day. They're overachieving and they are fun at times, especially when James Wood is on one of his hot streaks, but this team is what they are. And you're going to get a lot more 10-2, 10-1 losses, walk-off grand slams than you are 7-8 game win streaks.
So it's interesting because you are very low on the Nats. Like, do you think that this you know, hovering around 500 is going to start to fall off at some point? And maybe that even just becomes they're selling at the deadline more to make that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. They're going to sell. I don't think C.J. Abrams is long for this team, and they're going to sell pieces that have any kind of value that other teams want at all that they can get anything back for. So I think you're going to see as guys get ejected from this team and get pushed out of the plane, I think that you're going to see this team start to drop off a little bit more for sure.
God, I hate hearing that because, you know what, like, Jake, this team won a World Series and never even had a chance to really defend it because it was the 2020 season and it was 62 mm-hmm. games. And then they just gutted this roster. And it just feels like it's been a perpetual rebuild and now a rebuild from the rebuild that they thought they had from the beginning. It just feels like it's never ending at this point, team. Like they've just been spinning their tires in the mud for years.
Yeah, they've been trapped in purgatory, and some of that is self-made. Some of the, like you said, they gutted the roster. It started with the Juan Soto trade years ago. And granted, they got good pieces back from that, but it's just they haven't gotten to the phase yet of actually building around the core. And I think you're going to see it when you see guys like C.J. Abrams get traded. Okay, well, who's the next guy that you build around? Is it just James Wood, or is he a piece on the block in the coming years? It just feels like they haven't chosen a direction yet. Now, granted, it's the first year of new front office, and they got to start to build their vision first. But, you know, it is a little it's a little frustrating to be in that purgatory, and I say that as a Bulls fan.
That is true. Although I will say your Bulls at least have a top four pick and they're going to have a new head coach. So maybe it's a different direction in Chicago now, perhaps?
Because it went so great the last time they had a top four pick. Hello, Patrick Williams.
That's very true. Jacob Mizorowski throwing a 104.5-mile-an-hour fastball. I mean, are we getting to the point now where pitchers are just, because, you know, we talk about, like, you know, NFL players, like even offensive linemen, they're getting bigger, but they're getting faster. Like every athlete just seems like we're upping it with training and nutrition. And are we going to have guys just continuing to top this year after year? Because a few years ago, it was like Aroldis Chapman. And you thought, oh God, he was hitting like maybe 102 max. And it was insane that he was throwing that fast. It just feels like pitchers are throwing faster and faster in baseball now.
They are, and it's part of the training, and it's part of, I mean, as athletes evolve and the natural progression of humanity, it's just, you know, it's dog-eat-dog world. So it's just these athletes are going to continue to evolve. But I will say when it comes to Jacob Mizorowski, though, he's a freak. I mean, he's a freak to even look at. He's a weird-looking guy, but, like, he's just built insane. And so he's tall, he's gangly, he's all knees and elbows, but that definitely helps him. But, yeah, I mean, it's just the natural, as these young guys start to evolve and get better and time goes on, you're going to see these guys be better and better. But I also do think that Jacob Mizorowski is kind of a one-of-one. Like, he's a guy where you don't see that a lot. You don't see somebody who's like this. And I think to think that, oh, well, the next Jacob Mizorowski's around the corner, that might be pushing it a little much.
I saw you taking some swings out there in Omaha. How fast were those pitches?
Let's not talk about that.
We're going to talk about it. Did you make any contact at all?
I got one. I got one at the end. I got one over the wall at the end. So I saved it a little. But I was expecting to be shamed a little bit. It's been a while since I took a baseball swing. I'm a golfer, Nick. I'm a golfer. I'll break 80 on you, but I'm not built for baseball anymore.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about that the other day. It's like, because now I've become the guy, and you can make fun of me. It's fine. I've fallen in love with pickleball. I think I'm going to be a pickleballer. But, like, people that play ping pong and then they get into pickleball, it kind of translates. But tennis, it's a little bit different. As a golfer that then goes and swings a baseball bat, does that mess your swing up at all? Because I know it's the opposite the other way.
I hope not. I'll let you know when I'm out there next week for Father's Day. I'll let you know how it goes. But I'm hoping not. I'm hoping that I can get back. Once I'm back in Chicago, I can get on the range a couple times, and we'll even things out.
All right, Hassan's Hacks on Substack, the show in the U, wherever you get your podcasts. Jake Hassan out there in Omaha for the College World Series for Game Day Garage. Check out all of the coverage that's there on all of the social media platforms, on YouTube, Game Day Garage. Jake, good to talk to you, buddy. Stay out of trouble, and I think maybe you need to get back in the batting cage. Just take some more swings. I think you can get some more contact. We need to see it.
I'm glad at least one of us has faith in that.
I believe in you, buddy. I'll see you.
Later, buddy.
There he goes. And, you know, it's cool, right? Because I've never been to the College World Series, and like I may not follow college baseball specifically, but the one thing you know is, like, again, events really matter in this country. World Cup becomes a thing. College World Series becomes a thing. I'd even argue the Little League World Series. It's funny, like, Little League World Series just makes you think of, like, the middle of summer, right? It's just on. You kind of have it in the background. Again, events are just what resonate the most with all of us. I still can't imagine what it would be like, though, to try and swing at a pitch going almost 105 miles an hour. I mean, I'm not hitting it. I know that. There's just no way. 105 miles an hour. That's what we saw last night from Jacob Mizorowski and the Brewers. Like, God, the Nats are going to be bad forever. Strober, are the Nats just going to be bad forever? Is this what we're dealing with now?
No, they will not.
I love this. Okay, all right. So you feel good. Jake is down on them, and he has been down on them all year. Every time I talk to him, he's like, "Nah, man, this team, the bottom's gonna fall out at some point." I want him to be wrong, just so I can give him crap for it. But it does. I'm worried that, like, that walk off grand slam the other night against the Giants and that blown lead is gonna be something that's, you know.
It's not about this year, though.
No, it's not.
Everybody knows that. So that's why. Like, the question is, will they be bad forever? No, I think they'll be quite good, actually, a year or two from now.
A year or two. Really, when you think about it, the Capitals are separate here, but the other three major sports teams in D.C., all rebuilding, all kind of feel like the arrow's trending up. The Nats, the Commanders, the Wizards, all three of them, right?
There's a real plan for the Nats, and the Wizards have gone under this plan as well. The Commanders, I don't really know what the direction of the Commanders is, because they got the quarterback in the first year of their rebuild, so that kind of, like, messed everything up in terms of what they were really trying to do, so that everything's been on the fly for them a little bit. But typically, I think teams that go through a rebuild with a full plan come out on the other side pretty well off.
Yeah, I mean, when you get your quarterback and you win 12 games his rookie year, you kind of think, hey, maybe we're not rebuilding. And then they got slapped in the face last season and won 5 games and everybody was hurt and they had no depth and went, oh, never mind. We actually are rebuilding. We should probably take a little bit more time to do it. I do feel like this offseason for the Commanders at least was in a better position, where it feels like a team now that's not just signing guys to one-year deals and figuring it out and throwing pieces together. There's a little bit more of a plan to it, but it still actually has to come together. Speaking of plans, Patrick Mahomes' contract reset the quarterback market. What that means for Jaden Daniels and his quarterback class next. Nick Adams. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Patrick Mahomes just keeps getting $500 million contracts, right? I mean, it's like one $500 million after another $500 million after another. This is, I mean, what, his third extension now? Now, this one is obviously, you know, there's incentives in there. It could get up to, what, $522 million. It's $64 million a year, though. And the Chiefs were smart. Because the Chiefs were smart and decided, we're going to do this right away. And we're going to get it done. And they just kept adding after that. But look, it may seem early, but it's not. You have to start thinking about what Jaden Daniels' contract is going to look like. And I get it. There's a lot that's up in the air. Because if he has a season like last year where he's hurt and you don't get to see a lot from him, we're going to be talking about a very different situation than, hey, Jaden Daniels looks like he did in his rookie year. We don't have to worry about injuries as much. We see what we know what Jaden Daniels is capable of, right? We know how good he can be. We saw it his rookie year. We also know that there is a risk of injuries derailing a season, as we saw last season. So right now, it's like 1-1. You got the high end, really good extreme, and you got the low end, really bad extreme. That's why this year 3 is so important. He's going to be in a new offense with potentially a better offensive coordinator. We don't know what David Blau's offense is going to be for sure. Everybody's raving about it. They're excited. But, like, when does anybody in the offseason ever say anything other than positive, right? Everybody's always in the best shape of their life unless they're recovering from an injury, and then they're making progress, and everybody loves the offense and who they're working with. Everything's positive. So where are we week 5, week 6, week 7? That's what's really going to matter. And again, I know we're not necessarily there right now, but we also kind of are. Where the discussions, they're being had behind the scenes. What's the framework? What could this thing look like? What's going to be the high end versus the low end? I mean, look, it's not like the Texans and the Panthers haven't signed Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud to any extensions. But they got to figure this thing out. And it's a lot different because C.J. Stroud looked really bad in the playoffs last year and forgot how to quarterback. Yet at the same time, they won, what, 10 games every year that he's been their starter, and he's probably going to get paid a significant amount of money. Bryce Young's more complicated for the Panthers because, yeah, they made the playoffs, but they made the playoffs by going in the back door, and they weren't even over 500. And it's like, oh, well, they almost beat the Rams. But is Bryce Young really a franchise quarterback? So what? Like, there's not a lot of like middle class for quarterbacks that are starters in the NFL, right? It's like you got to pay him a ton, or you're a bridge quarterback that gets a short-term deal for like 1 year, $20 million or whatever it is. It's a difficult spot to be in, but Jaden Daniels' class of quarterbacks could go down as the greatest draft class of quarterbacks that we've ever seen. It's possible. I mean, 1, 2, and 3, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May alone right there, have all had levels of success, have all won at least one playoff game, have all shown high-end potential that's there. Now, the rest of that with a Michael Penix Jr., J.J. McCarthy, injury. Bo Nix, it's kind of like maybe a lower ceiling, but a relatively high floor. And, of course, he was healthy until he got hurt in the playoffs. And I'd argue that Broncos are winning that AFC Championship game and maybe winning the Super Bowl. And then we'd be talking about Bo Nix in that conversation as well. But, I mean, 6 quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks. You're going to have some guys get some record deals. Yet at the same time, not one of them is going to, on their first extension, not one of them is touching this Mahomes deal. Like, you know, it's usually reset the market and then someone else jumps them and then someone else jumps them. That ain't happened with this. Not yet. Not on the first one. Now, you can look at some, you know, estimates, and it's like, oh, Jaden Daniels could come in around $53 million, maybe $53 million a season. Again, Mahomes is at 64-ish right now. I mean, if Jaden Daniels has a year this year like he did his rookie year, you're probably coming in closer to 60. But I don't think he's going to go over Mahomes, because here's the thing. And again, I'm talking a year like last year. There's a lot of hypotheticals here. I understand it, but this is how this is going to be right now. Patrick Mahomes, before he signed his first extension, which was technically $500 million, but you know, not all guaranteed, and there were a bunch of different things to it that would get it to that point. And he signed a bunch of extensions there. But let's just use round numbers. First Mahomes extension, $500 million, you know, a few years ago. He had already won an MVP, a Super Bowl MVP. He'd done it all. That was his first year as a starter. The Chiefs knew, like, I mean, it's only going to get more expensive. He's only going to cost more if we wait. So they went above and beyond. They didn't try to negotiate and get everybody right in that middle and thread the needle. They just said, screw it. We're going all in on this, and we know what it's going to be. The teams that decide they want to wait, like our pal Jera down there in Dallas, oh, well, you know, eventually we're going to get the deal done, but we're going to have to take our time. And he's done it twice with Dak Prescott, and what happens? He loves the negotiation. He loves the fight. He loves it all. And then what you end up getting is you end up just paying more because someone else signs an extension first, and then Dak's like, oh, price just went up. But now it's going to be harder to justify that. Now, Dak's right there at the top with Mahomes, a little bit below him, but right there kind of in the middle with a lot of quarterbacks sitting around $55 million a year. Jaden Daniels looks like Jaden Daniels even from his rookie year. We're talking baseline, starting $55 million a year. Now, the guaranteed money, you have a lot of wiggle room. The guaranteed money can go in. I mean, again, forget Deshaun Watson's stupid contract, worst contract in sports, the $230 million guaranteed. That's not going to happen. But the next one up is like 146, I think Josh Allen, and you start going down the list there. And all right, that might be what we're talking about. It's where you can have the wiggle room of like the guaranteed money or where it's spread out or those types of things. But Jaden Daniels' contract is likely going to be expensive. And listen, even if he misses a couple of games this year because of injuries, what do you think this team's going to do? Be like, nah, we want to see another year. No, because that means there is a chance that it gets more expensive. And you're going to have Drake May then potentially signing an extension. And if Drake May signs an extension, then Jaden Daniels is going to want to use that as a baseline. Now, you can make the argument, oh, well, Drake May went to a Super Bowl and you went to an NFC Championship game. You start having those negotiations, you got a problem. It's going to start threading the needle too much, and it's going to make it very controversial. It's going to make it very, very uncomfortable, which all negotiations are for contracts to a certain point. But we're going to see a lot of quarterbacks getting a lot of extensions over the next year, year and a half from that draft class, and none of them are still going to touch Patrick Mahomes. And now look, the AFC is loaded. The Chiefs are a team that's probably a middle-of-the-pack AFC team right now. But they've got a shot as long as they have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. Now, have they gotten cocky? Have they gotten arrogant? Yes, because it's like, Rashee Rice, well, we're good with our one number one receiver when he's actually not in trouble or healthy. We got Travis Kelce, but they didn't have a level of talent at receiver for a while, and it finally caught up to him even before he got hurt last year. But when you have Patrick Mahomes, you always have a shot with that team, and that's the reason why they paid him what he paid him, even with an AFC that's like, the division is not even the Chiefs to own at this point either, let alone the conference. So it's a tough spot to be in, to say the least. Nick Ashew on the Fan.